Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, and welcome to Hot D Takes. This podcast series covers HBO's House of the Dragon episode by episode with myself, an avid reader of all things ASWAF, and my friend Manny, a Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon fan who is unsullied, aka has never read the books, being your stalwart hosts. So first things first, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, TikTok, Twitter, at A Geek Saga.
And I'm Manny, the aforementioned unsullied co-host, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Manissimo Art. Thanks for joining us for this episode, in which we will cover House of the Dragon Season 2, Episode 6, titled Small Folk.
As a reminder, expect spoilers from the episode we're covering, but there will also be only very minimal book spoilers from Fire and Blood, which is, of course, the source material for House of the Dragon. And just to remind anybody who might be stumbling on this and hasn't listened to our past episodes, when I say very minimal book spoilers, I mean that we basically would only ever talk about things from the book that have already happened in the show. I just want to be very clear about this because I did get a question about it recently. And I forgot to say something about it last week. So we will kick off with our episode summary. Then before we get into our hot takes, we'll be going over some predictions that Manny made prior to watching the episode. Additional discussion of these predictions will possibly slash probably be woven into our hot takes and or our episode specific favorites roundup at the conclusion of the discussion. But as this is only our second week doing this with the predictions, please continue to bear with us as we feel it out.
We also have a rating system that we will, like true Targaryens, fill in when and where we please. And that system includes rating things on a scale of 1 to 10 Targ eyebrows.
Just one last piece of business before we dig in. Don't forget that Geek Saga Entertainment does have a Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to these Hot D Takes podcast episodes. Check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
And now it's time for the long and the short of it, our weekly episode summary.
Even though the Team Green forces are amassing, it turns out that some of them aren't exactly the most obedient allies. Namely, Jason Lannister, who rolls up to Golden Tooth and announces they'll be staying a while. How short or how long depends on when Aemond joins them with Vhagar. Obviously, Aemond is furious about this demand, and he quickly moves on to demands of his own. That they strike up an alliance with the Triarchy in hopes that the Free Cities will help them break the blockade, that Alicent stop pretending she's a member of the Small Council, and that Littlefooter send for good ol' Otto to return his hand. Speaking of hands, Corlys is in fact at Dragonstone and sporting the Hand of the King pin that Baela delivered to him, though there doesn't seem to be much for him to do at the moment because Rhaenyra is in last-ditch effort mode and very focused on finding more dragon riders. She asks Ser Darklyn of her Kingsguard, who has about a drop of Targ blood, to attempt riding Sea Smoke, something that goes about as well as you'd expect. Meaning Sea Smoke makes him into some charbroiled style baby gone ribs. Thankfully, this isn't the only plan Team Black was putting into motion, as Missaria helped stack some kindling in King's Landing, aka having Madame Sylvie spread some Team Black propaganda so that the small folk would be even more hot and bothered than they already were. The fire's just itching to be lit by, of all things, boats full of food. Boats full of food flying Rhaenyra's flag that they somehow sent right onto the beaches of King's Landing, that is. How nice of Team Black to inundate the small folk of King's Landing with the supplies their own blockade has kept out for so long. That's how the small folk see it, at least, which leaves them even more angry at the current King's Landing regime. So when they come upon Alicent and Helaena, the people are intent on taking out their ire on the queens. A chase ensues, with Alicent and Helaena barely making it into the mobile igloo before the mob overtakes them. Honestly, can we all just agree to leave poor Helaena out of these shitstorms? Just leave her in her room with her bugs, for fuck's sake.
But as for Alicent, this was really just the cap on her no good, very bad day. She was already lamenting her father not returning her calls, had to hear that the son she didn't raise actually turned out way better than the ones that she did, and didn't even get to say a proper goodbye to her boy Coleslaw. Talk about her reaping what she sows lately. And she's not the only one, because Daemon is straight up losing it at Harrenhal. Now he's having nightmares about Viserys, waking up in odd places, losing any modicum of trust that he might have had for Sir Simon Strong, and debasing himself. His feeling, not ours. By asking Alice Rivers for advice on how to deal with all those pesky riverlords. Of course, he doesn't seem at all keen on listening to most of her advice, especially her intel on how important House Tully is and why. But in the end, she tells him the word will soon change anyway, only for us to learn that she offered her, quote, healing, unquote, skills to the seriously ill Grover Tully, who sadly died anyway. Daemon has to be very grateful for Alice in this moment. But whatever bonding the two of them are doing is nothing compared to Rhaenyra's growing bond with Missaria, or the very special new bond poor lonely Sea Smoke seems to have initiated with Corlys's bastard son, Adam of Hall. We are very happy for Rhaenyra and Missaria and Adam and Sea Smoke, but Rhaenyra herself harbors some curious concerns about Sea Smoke having found a new writer. She's off on Syrax to address them, so we'll see how that goes.
But in the meantime, let's review Maester Manny's predictions for this week. You said the Blacks will get a victory in this one.
Yes, and they did.
They did. It wasn't a big battle or anything.
No.
But they have successfully convinced the small folk that they are the good guys in King's Landing.
Yeah, this is where I messed up, because this originally said the Blacks are going to get a victory. It said maybe the Starks will show up. And then the next thing I put on there that I deleted stupidly, I was like, Rhaenyra is going to do something great for King's Landing that's really going to get support.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure, sure.
Of course,
sure.
One that I took off, you know, that's how prophecies work, man. Come on, dude.
Maybe the Starks will show up eventually. I did leave this in as a little sub bullet point here, that maybe the Starks will show up and they can attack something. I hope, for fuck's sake, the Starks show up at some point. Because when you sent me these, my response was, my God, I hope the Starks show up. And they didn't. Yeah. So I was like kind of on the same page with you about the Starks anyway. This next one, I don't know about this, but go ahead and read this, the one about Alicent.
So Alicent, I feel like with her power kind of like being gone, no one's going to listen to her. You're going to go back to where you were comfortable, which was Rhaenyra, because that's who she kind of grew up with, and that's part of that nostalgia, I don't know, maybe for her. So what I kind of predicted was that when no one's going to listen to Alicent, that Alicent is going to start turning her face towards Rhaenyra, looking for some kind of hope that things are not going to completely fly out of control. Because I think that's Alicent's kind of biggest worry is with Aemond, you know, that Aemond's on her and she knows that it's just going to be fucking blood. At least I feel that it's building up in Alicent that she doesn't want things to go real fucking south, which they're already going.
Well, and I think that at the very least, she did lose that last little bit of influence that she had with Aemond saying, oh, hey, mommy, don't come back to the small council meetings anymore. We don't need you. I left this prediction in there because while nothing came of it in this episode, because there was further removal of any influence that she had, I do think that there's like a possibility that something, and I'm really like saying this as without knowing, because they have changed enough, really, that I don't know one way or the other. I left it in here because of that. The third thing you predicted, what you said was Daemon will start making it clear that the people he gets to join the cause are joining his cause and not that of Rhaenyra. This didn't happen in this episode, but I think that as we've seen last episode, and even with some of the things he said to Alice in this episode about, Rhaenyra never wanted it anyway, et cetera. I do think that there's still a possibility that this sort of thing is going to come to fruition. So it might not have happened in the episode Small Folk, but that's not to say it won't happen in the future.
Yeah. I got to start getting my predictions a little closer in the timeline. I keep throwing them out like it's, well, like, okay, so what's going to happen at the end is this.
Again, this is a brand new thing that we're doing and we're still feeling it out. But I do think that you're throwing out predictions that aren't totally off the wall, right? But
yeah,
it's hard. I mean, to be honest, it's hard even for me to understand, like, okay, well, where are they going to go in this episode? Mm-hmm. You know? So I think, and it might take us the rest of the season to kind of, for you to like figure out like how focused they need to be, but that's okay. Cause it's a brand new thing we're doing. Like, listen, when we started covering this season, I like totally forgotten how funny our hot takes used to be named. And I feel like our first episode for season two, the hot takes were just not named very well. And so I've just really been trying so hard to go over the top with them. And on that note, we're going to talk about hot take number one, HOTD, the return of our king.
Hell yeah.
I guess we should have assumed once we saw Millie that Paddy Considine would also return, but I didn't. So when I saw him, because I didn't know if you were watching it somehow last night I actually started it right at 6 p.m. my time. And I was like, I cannot spoil this for Manny. So I'm sitting there just my fingers just itching to message you. Our king.
Yeah. I was about 15 minutes behind is what it was. Mm. So I would have been there, but 15 minutes later.
I waited until the episode was over for me. And then I think I waited like another 15 to 30 minutes after that. I was like, okay, he didn't say he wasn't watching it tonight. So I'm going to test the waters with just a message that says, oh man.
Yep.
Oh, it was so good to see him again.
It was so good. And when they had him in the distance, I remember thinking like, did they actually get him though? Or is it just going to be some kind of like ghostly image of the king and he's not going to say anything? And he started talking. He's got the fucking crown. He's got the sword in his hand. And I was like, fucking hallelujah. Hell yeah.
The things he was saying were so close to the actual conversation he had with Daemon about, well, now you fucked up. You have to go back to Runestone. They were so close to that actual conversation that they had in season one that I was like, fuck, is this actually him though? Or did they just edit in a scene from season one? I can't remember at which point watching it. It might have not even been until he started crying at the end of that scene that I finally was like, okay, no, this definitely is not a copy or whatever, thrown into the episode. I just, not only did we get to see him once, we got to see him twice. So good.
You know, sometimes people, they just like go from your life and you're just like, okay with it. And then when you see them again, it's like, you just want to break down like a baby. Cause you're like, oh my gosh, I just forgot how much I totally fucking missed you. So it was so fucking awesome to see him again, dude. I was so happy.
Yeah. There's really just nothing more to say about that other than that I somehow didn't expect it. I'm so fucking glad it happened. So if you haven't watched the house that Dragons built for this episode, I highly suggest it because Patty is featured pretty heavily in the beginning. In this one, there's just a good, I don't know, 5 minutes or more of them talking about Patty coming back, interviews with him. Patty talks about him seeing his giant statue for the first time and stuff. It's really good. So it's like good to see more Patty in general.
Yeah.
So
hell yeah.
Okay. I'm very proud of the name of this next hot take.
Yes. I'm going to read it, but Sarah wrote it. Okay. Just want everyone to know.
I wasn't trying to take credit. I'm just really fucking proud. I had to ask you. I was like, okay, does this make sense? Do you understand the reference I'm making? So just everyone listening going into this, know that I double checked that Manny at least understood what I was going for.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, hot take number 2, Chicken Soup for the Targaryen Soul by Alice Rivers.
Alice calling Daemon out on how it's totally his MO to just run away whenever things aren't going his way was so great. 10 out of 10 Targ eyebrows. Like, such a good call out. Yeah. Love it.
I love her character. I'm so happy with her character. Daemon whining about how Rhaenyra never wanted the crown and she just shrugs it off as perhaps that's why he gave the crown to her. Those who strive for it are least suited to wear it. Viserys never wanted it himself. It came to him and he did his best. It's not a prize to be won, but a burden to bear.
Ooh, 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 ooh. Viserys never wanted it himself. It came to him and he did his best. Really? Like, who would have thought that Daemon would actually finally ask Alice for advice, though?
Look, man, when you're in the Haunted Mansion and you've been spooked for however long, I think at that point, yeah, you'd probably change a little bit and be like, you know what? I think I need some advice because I got my dead brother over here. I was just sleeping with, like, you know, my mom or whatever, and I'm having some problems, man, you know?
Well, but I also, especially because he like attacked Sir Simon, like just before this, he literally held a knife to the guy's throat. Then he just sits down with Alice and is like, can I ask your advice? I mean, he doesn't say it like that. And she makes some sort of smart ass comment and he's like, counsel. I don't know. It's like, he's still trying to kind of put her in her place. It's, ew, dude, fuck off. You're fucking everything up here. This girl knows shit. She knows shit. I like how she, you know, it is like a tell, don't show scene because she describes the Tullys and why they are so important. Like, they're not the richest. They don't own, what does she say? I can't remember. She says they're not the richest. And they don't have the biggest castle or something along those lines, or they're not the oldest family. I don't know. But like, she's describing the Tullys and she's like, they're not this, they're not that, but what they are is wise, and they have held shit together in this area of Westeros where all of the lords, petty and otherwise, are constantly like almost at each other's throats for all this time. I did love the line, rivermen are made of mud. They would rather die stuck in it than yield 1 inch to one another. At first, I thought it was very interesting when she told him, do nothing now, because in 3 days' time, the winds will shift. And that felt like a straight up prediction to me. Obviously, like her saying she could hear the like wails of the women and children, that could have been like she's hearing things from people who are someone's bringing herbs to the castle for her as the healer. And she hears things and she's being, you know, artsy about the way she's telling Damon she knows these things. But in this case, I was like, oh, that sounds like a straight up prediction until it wasn't because Alice actually went to River Run under the guise of helping poor old sick Grover Tully, and he basically immediately died after she quote-unquote tried to quote-unquote help him. There's their whole like, oh, she's a woods witch, but no witchy stuff here. No witchy stuff here, guys.
No witchy stuff. No. She just gave him some medicine. That's all, dude. That's fine. You know, people die all the time taking something, you know. I mean, she did her best to save him, I'm sure.
I'm a little surprised that she did that, presumably under the guise of helping Damon, who... like, why?
Well, that's the thing too, is like with that, it's like, wait a minute. I'm like, but what's your angle though? What are you trying to do here? Because everybody in this universe, nobody does things or sides with someone for the sake of just, hey, because I want to look out for you, right?
It hasn't really looked like or sounded like Alice really wanted to help Damon anyway, so.
No, but look, in my brain, I was half convinced that Alice didn't even exist. Okay, I really thought that it was like a figment of his fucking imagination. And I was sitting there, and one thing I had noticed was that when Damon was talking to her and then like Sir Simon walks in, I think it was in episode 5, that was the first time when you see him kind of like look over and acknowledge her as she was walking away. But if you look at where he was looking, he wasn't looking at her. It looked like he was looking in the direction of what he was talking to and kind of confused, like, oh, who are you talking to? I was half convinced that she didn't even exist. And I was like, okay. And then she actually went and murdered someone. I'm like, okay, well, you're real now, you know, because you murdered somebody.
Well, and also Sir Simon specifically says, Alice Rivers, our healer, went to ply her craft. Honestly, that's a very interesting take because you have not read the book, so you didn't know that she does actually exist. So I feel like in that case, they did a really good job of, she's a woods witch, but there's no witchy shit going on here. Like, but also maybe she doesn't exist at all. I like that they made you believe that maybe she didn't exist at all.
Yeah. And it really did for like the few episodes or whatever. I was like, I'm convinced she doesn't exist. And then I was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, and in episode 5, I was like, okay, Sir Simon acknowledged that she was there. And then I watched that episode again before I watched episode 6. And I looked at that scene very carefully. I just happened to look up and I saw it. And when you see him, the way he looks, he's not looking at her walking away. He's almost looking in the direction of where she's walking. And he looked back kind of puzzled because Damon was talking in that direction. So he almost seemed like, oh, like, who are you talking to? You know, like that's how it came off to me. So at that point, I was convinced that she wasn't even real. But it's fine. She killed someone.
Presumably. It's just a rumor. Actually, it's not even a rumor. Even Sir Simon is like, oh, you know, she tried. And then he just died immediately after he's been just laying there sick all this time. Does Sir Simon even believe that? I don't know. That's an entirely different story that we don't need to get into. We don't have time for it. We're going to move on to hot take number 3. Where in the world is good old Otto Hightower? No, but for real though, is he just ignoring the letters from King's Landing because he's in a tiff about Aegon dismissing him, or is something quote unquote worse going on? And I'm putting that in quotes because, like, lol, I don't know if I care at all if something worse is going on, because this is good old Otto we're talking about. And well, he definitely had some good things to say about Viserys earlier in the season. Let's not board that Team Green propaganda train with him. It's very interesting that nobody knows where he is. He's not answering any. It's not just Allison either. It seems that others have tried to contact him. And
no, I'm thinking that he got captive somewhere. Somebody took him prisoner. He killed himself. Or he's just scheming with some other something. Hmm. He's doing some other scheme with somebody else, right?
These all sound like a lump of Maester Manny predictions over here.
I know, it kind of is, right? I probably should have put those in there. But yeah, I get this feeling like he's going to show up with some other army, being somebody to these people, and then they're going to join Rhaenyra's side because he got fucking butthurt because he got kicked out of the council.
Who knows? It is weird that nobody can get a hold of him. He's leaving everybody on red.
Yep.
at least the whole mystery of where he is and or why he's not responding led to Allison having a very interesting conversation with her brother. Gwaine and Coleslaw are moving out of King's Landing again, and Allison is about to go over to Coleslaw, but then sees her brother. There was that whole, her brother Gwaine, he totally is like, why are you going to him? She diverts. And she goes to ask Gwaine, like, oh, have you heard from dad? Good old dad over here. He's like, no. If he was going to talk to anybody, it would be to you. And also, like, yeah. I haven't sent any messages because of that. This is kind of a side note. It's not entirely in the realm of this hot take, but I wanted to include it here because the idea of Otto being persona non grata at the moment led to them having this conversation where at the beginning, Gwaine didn't really seem to like Allison. Maybe this was just jealousy because she was daddy's favorite. Then they start talking about Darren, who's been fostered in Old Town. And apparently Darren, again, the son that we mentioned in the summary was not raised by her, is, according to Gwaine, stalwart and clever and kind. So I guess it was good that she sent him to be raised elsewhere. At least she's got one kid who's apparently not a piece of shit.
Fuck yeah, not a fuck up. Yep.
At the very end, their parting seemed a bit nicer than the conversation did at first. So, like, yeah. I guess if you're on the side of Allison and her bro having a good relationship, that's a plus. But I did really think that that was an interesting... She used the excuse of like, oh, have you heard from good old dad? And he's like, yep. Fuck no, I haven't. He wouldn't talk to me anyway. But then we get to learn a little bit more about this mystery third son who is apparently like way cooler than the prince regent. And then her very ill child who is also bad. We'll see if he continues to be a piece of shit too. I'm guessing he's not going to change that much, but
no. But shit, man, you know, it's like the one kid you don't raise and he's fucking great. And all your kids are just kind of pieces of shit. Think she's just a bad mom. But that scene when she's talking to her brother made me think of, you know, that meme that they used like a bunch of times with that guy. I can't remember what his name is. When it's like, hey, what are you doing? And he's like, nothing, just hanging around. That's what that scene made me think of. What is his name? Beetlejuice? I think his name is Beetlejuice.
Yeah, but it's not Beetlejuice like the Beetlejuice. Yes.
No.
Okay.
But he's that guy. He's like famous.
Yes. I know what you're talking about. I just looked it up. This might be the meme for the week.
That was the first thing I thought of because it's like, oh, what are you doing? He's just like, just hanging around. Like, yeah. Sure you
I'm gonna
are.
Have to find like a fan art picture of Darren because obviously he has not been in the show. So
yeah.
Any other thoughts about the where in the world is a good old Otto Hightower?
My thoughts is obviously they're building it up and they're doing it beautifully. They're just doing it very quietly, like, hey, well, where is this guy? So I don't know. I'm sure that the Maester will have some predictions about that in the future. Hot take number 4: the takedown and revenge of Larry's Littlefooter. Littlefooter overstepping himself with Aemon about how he should appoint a new hand of the king and Aemon calling him out on it while whoever that guy is rolling his eyes and then laughing when Aemon orders Littlefooter to go fetch good old Otto. I loved this scene because for the love of fucking God, are all of these people creepy? You know, I just feel like they're all kind of like manipulative and like they just make me feel uncomfortable. They're just so manipulative and it's just like, dude, and I just loved that Aemon was like, oh no, it's not you. Like, yeah, it's a great idea, but no, it's not you. Go find Otto.
So the guy who was the only other guy in the room at that point for some reason, well, I guess not for some reason, because Coleslaw is gone again, off to actually fight in the war or whatever. Tywin Lannister is apparently off to go meet with the Triarchy. That's what I'm assuming, since he didn't appear to be there. And the Grand Maester, he came in at the end and picked up his attendance ball. That's what it is. Dean actually called this. He thought it was a talking ball too. And I was like, No. That's I didn't say it at the time. It's like, no, we've decided it's the attendance ball, which I guess we probably should have known this already. We probably would have known it if I'd paid any attention to that other than the balls existing in season one. But anyway, so Grand Maester Orwyle comes in late because Aegon woke up. So the only other person in the room had to have been the Master of Laws, who is Lord Wild. Anyway, just I love how they just showed him rolling his eyes at Larry's Littlefooter's obvious insinuation that, oh, you should pick a hand of the king. And like, and then when Aemond is like, yeah, you're right, I should. I don't remember what he said, but you know, something along those lines. Somehow, first of all, anybody who isn't just a fucking narcissistic weirdo piece of shit creeper probably would have been like, oh no, he's saying he's gonna like utilize me to go find a new hand of the king. But Littlefooter's immediate response is, oh, I never thought. And Aemond's like, no, you asshole.
You dumbass. I'm not talking about you.
Go find my grandfather.
Larry's Littlefooter, he's like the worst of all of those people of that character class in Game of Thrones, right? Because he's like the most like dumb. This guy is just so creepy. He's not charismatic at all. There's no charm to him. At least Littlefinger like was really good at that. You can hang out with him and I can see anyone being enthralled by him, right? Because he's very charming. He's a great talker, master manipulator, you know? And then Larry Littlefooter is like, hey, yeah, that's a great, thank you for the honor of like, it's like, you're an idiot, dude. Come on. Like, how stupid do you feel right now?
Well, especially when Lord Wilde over there is like in the corner. It was great. Like the background stuff in this season, the Kingsguard members in episode 4 just being fucking Three Stooges shit in the background. And now this, they have their background actors on point. Obviously, Lord Wilde isn't only a background actor, but in this case, he was. But yeah, this led to Littlefooter paying Baby Gone a visit. And at first, I thought Littlefooter was trying to like torture Baby Gone a bit when he made the Septa or whoever it was withhold the milk. I'm guessing it was Milk of the Poppy. But it turned into like actually a meaningful conversation. And I know he was only there and having this conversation because he's pissed off at Aemond. But it was also somehow weirdly one of the more like normal sort of things Littlefooter has done, actually trying to relate to Baby Gone, you know, saying like, listen, in his mind and in the mind of Westeros, disability, really, I would call it like he was born differently abled, but
yeah,
he's saying like, now you are going to be, everybody's going to assume that you can't do things and your body isn't what it used to be, but you can hone your mind. It's still manipulative. I still do not like Larry's Littlefooter, but it was, like I said, sort of one of the more normal slash meaningful-ish conversations we've ever seen him have. Obviously, the fact that he's doing it for the wrong reasons takes a lot out of it, but
yeah, no, I'm there with you. That is definitely one of the first regular non-cringy conversations that I've seen him get into, because that entire character is just cringe, you know? Again, like I look at it and I'm just like, you know what? He's just doing it so this guy can get better. He'll be his fucking hand, right? Because he's like, well, remember when you were sick, I came to visit you and I gave you good words of advice. So with both of our feet together, we can have one hand, which is me. He's a weirdo.
Yeah. Not that I ever would have expected Baby Gone to see through it, but
no, Baby Gone would not see through that. Unfortunately, he is the he's the classic example of like when a CEO has a really big successful company and then their kid takes it over because they want to retire. Old man wants to retire, and then what always happens to those companies? They go completely down south and they just gone. It's that kind of thing, man. He's not smart.
No, he's not. I had to clear my throat for this. Hot take number 5. Team Black propaganda boats are sailing into the harbor, folks.
Yep, dude. Yes. Hell yes, dude. This is the best.
I want to be very clear that I was like, oh, I don't know how to word this hot take. I want it to be clever. I'm not finding it in my brain to be clever with this. And then I read through like some of your notes and I'm so sorry because this is actually like your idea, but like reworded.
It makes more sense for it to be boats
into ship language.
Yes, exactly.
But before we get into the boats and the food and everything, I just want to say, dear small folk, we get that you're mad and you have every right to be, but leave poor Helena out of it. In all seriousness, just stop. This poor girl.
Yeah, dude, for the love of gods, man, give this girl a break, bro. It just never stops for her. There's just like always something. Baby gets fucking killed, you know, has to deal with this mob of people trying to like chase her now, like all this shit.
In between the parading Baby J. Mm-hmm. Harris's body through the streets. Yep. And then like the carriage gets stuck. This poor girl. Mm-hmm. And then her husband is what he is. And then Amond, mm-hmm. who used to be nice to her, is what he is.
Yep.
Oh, and then her crickets aren't singing anymore. Or one of them isn't. Nope. She's very upset about that. Also, I really want her little bug cages. I don't want the bugs in them. I just want the little bug cages.
Yeah, that was really pretty. I like those.
Anyway, otherwise, I really do think they did a good job with the buildup for this. I don't know, like mini riot. It wasn't really mm-hmm. a riot. It was a little bit hard to tell what they were trying to portray because obviously the small folk are mad. They get more mad when the food stalls are out of food and then open carriages of sheep are just being driven through the streets. And listen, I know you got to feed your dragons. Not maybe a find a better way to transport the sheep.
Mm-hmm. In the middle of the night or something, you know, like
load that mobile igloo full of sheep, y'all. Nobody exactly. will see them. That thing is big. Exactly. Actually, yeah. I think the mobile igloo has a bigger interior than that little cart did.
Talk about enticing a riot here. Like, yeah, sure. These starving people, we're going to parade a bunch of hamburgers right through the middle of the square so they can all
lamb
look at it.
Shops. You this know? Is the song that does it. So correct me if I'm wrong or if you saw it differently, but it kind of looked like people were fighting over the food that Rhaenyra sent in. Okay. It looked that way to me, but then it seemed like they were still like so pro Rhaenyra and like also literally chasing down Alicent and Helaena as they leave the Sept. It looked like they were showing people in the streets fighting, mm-hmm. but then they kind of very quickly pivoted to the people like going after Alicent and Helaena. Mm-hmm. And I was like, maybe they're not fighting. Maybe they're all just like gathering together and like, yeah, fist bumping. Let's go to the Red Keep and shower them with Rhaenyra's banners. So.
Yeah, it was chaos, man. Look, but that's how it is. Even the most well-meaning people, they're all starving, man. You know, like they don't know how much food is coming in and they probably think that's the only food that's coming in, even though there was like a trail of boats behind those first few boats.
Also, like, let's be real. How? None of those boats had people on them.
No, that was
they
it.
Just magically... Well, I mean, Rhaenyra did say, like, let's hope it's cloudy over the Blackwater or whatever. Like, and okay, fine. But also, that scene where all the boats are, like, out in the fog, slowly coming out, I was like, there's only so much the tide does, my dude.
Yeah, and they're all facing in the right direction.
Yeah. You know, like,
exactly where they need to be going. And it's like, okay, but
it's fine.
Sure. It's fine. Look, I didn't care because the boat came in, baby.
Yeah.
That propaganda boat came in and I was there with my tickets like, let's go. Been waiting. I want to play the casinos tonight.
Okay. I'm really excited about this next one.
Hot take number 6. Rhaenyra and Viserys are sitting in a tree. KISSING. Fuck yes. This fucking scene. Yes.
Some of what I'm going to say, and I apologize for anybody listening who doesn't like when people do this, because I know like when I'm listening to podcasts, this isn't my favorite thing when people like basically recap a scene like point by point, but this needs to be recapped point by point because this entire scene was 10 out of 10 fucking Targ eyebrows from beginning to end, minus how horrible Masaria's backstory is, like, ugh. But I'm not going to take away points for that because it's not her fault. I loved the things that Rhaenyra said about Daemon. She was talking about how he was what she wanted to be, carefree, dangerous. And then she kind of pauses and she says, a man. And she was what he wanted to be, cherished by her father, his brother, Viserys, and made Viserys's heir. They were halves of a whole, but he wanted to possess her, but did not want to be possessed. And then when she finally took hold of what he believed should be or was his, he ran off, essentially, like very soon after that. Like he started doing things without her permission and then he ran off. So who knows what he's going to do now and whether he turns against her entirely or just does his disappearing act. She's lost him either way. Masaria says, you have me. And Rhaenyra says, you have my thanks, truly.
I'm just thinking about the scene right now, and it's making me.
Yeah.
While her feelings about Rhaenyra's trustworthiness and whatnot have obviously been building for a long time, it seems like Rhaenyra venting all these things about Daemon is probably the main catalyst for Missandei finally answering the question Rhaenyra asked all the way back in episode 1 or 2. I don't remember. The backstory is horrible, but telling it to Rhaenyra is her showing her trust in Rhaenyra even before she outright says she trusts her. I totally get this scene when it comes to that, right? Let's just say a long time ago, I found myself in a little bit of a issue and someone wanted me to confide in them. And I was like, well, no, because you are this other person's really good friend. And I know that anything I tell you is going to get, you know. So then she went and did something pretty illegal and said, well, if you tell my other person, then I'm going to be in extreme trouble. It was mutually assured destruction. And I was like, okay, I will now tell you everything because you have now put yourself in a position of vulnerability just like I am now. And I can ruin your life as much as you can ruin mine. So let's do this shit. So yes, I love it for that. You know, that she opens up, she's talking about pretty much venting about Daemon and stuff. And it puts that level of trust like, okay, well, this person is clearly being vulnerable. They're saying these things that could get them in trouble, I guess. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to open up to this person.
After Missandei tells her this like awful story and then says like, essentially, I believe in you. That's the simple way to put it. And Rhaenyra just kind of like rushes toward her and embraces her in what at first just seems like the longest hug ever. But then it's more than that. It's more than that. So they start nuzzling each other and then they kiss. They're making out. And we are here for, I am here for it. I'm assuming you are also here for it. So I'm saying,
I am 100%. That
we are here for it.
Yeah. That scene, dude, literally gave me the same feelings when I was younger. And you'd get a position like that when you like somebody and then you get to that point. That first opening volley of love, my heart was racing. I felt like the nervousness in my stomach. That's how I felt watching that scene. And I was like, oh my God, I wish I was Missandei so much right now. You know, like, I wish that was me.
You made me bad.
But yeah, that scene, holy shit, man. But you know what, dude? Talk about it being done so beautifully and so like romantic and pretty, just so real. Fantastic setup, fantastic writing, fantastic acting on their parts. It wasn't over the top. It wasn't like cheesy. It was so natural. The way they did it was so natural, which is probably why I felt the way I was feeling, right? You know, and it wasn't just like, oh, I'm a dude. It's like, oh, look, man, two chicks. Yeah, I can't wait. This is awesome. It wasn't like that. It was just beautiful.
One thing I will say is that in Fire and Blood, their relationship is written about as like maybe there was like a physical thing there, but it, it's always portrayed as this sort of, well, Missandei, the white worm, she's bad and she like tricked Rhaenyra. And I fucking hope they don't go that way. I cannot imagine that they are going to, because us both describing the scene, how it happened, their conversation, how it happened, all of their conversations they've had before this. You know, like Missandei said, you've treated me as an equal, and this is super important to me. And I also believe that you are a good leader. And I can't imagine they're going to go that way with it in the show. I honestly would be super fucking pissed if they do. But yeah, in the book, in Fire and Blood, again, it's portrayed as a much more dangerous sort of questionable pairing. If, and it's always an if, we heard that maybe Rhaenyra and Missandei and Daemon were like a throuple and it was like bad because it was like manipulative. And now it's like, well, Daemon's fucking gone and Missandei is opening up and telling Rhaenyra all the worst things about herself. Oh my God. I loved it. I loved it so much. I loved it so much. I loved it.
It was
so
a beautiful scene. It was just beautiful. 100% beautiful.
I really fucking hope they continue on that track with it and don't try to make it out to be something different, because the way it's being portrayed now, I don't remember what episode it was. I mean, obviously episode 1, we were talking about the scar thing and everything, but I've said over and over again, I want this to be a thing. I want them to have something more than friendship. I want there to be queer representation outside of Laenor, who is gone and hopefully living his best life in Essos. Yeah, I want this to be a positive thing and not a negative thing.
It is a positive thing. And I'll tell you why, because like, it's cool that there's representation for everybody, right? But when you watch a scene that really is, it's not representing me, right? Because I'm just a straight dude. There was just something that I completely connected with it 100% because the way it was written, the way it was done, the way it was built up. To me, when I look at it, it wasn't so much about, oh, there's two people of the same sex kissing. It was about two people that secretly loved each other and it's coming out. That's what the goal should be for that. When you're trying to do representation, yeah, it's cool. Absolutely. There needs to be representation. But like what needs to be represented is a legitimate, natural love, I guess, like if you're trying to tell that story. And with this, I just felt like
it was love, respect, acts of service.
Yeah. And it was so transcendent in the sense of whether they were girls, guys, two guys, guy and a girl. To me, at that point, watching it, it was completely irrelevant because it captured the entire purity of what that is, to where it transcended beyond the physical. It was like a spiritual fucking thing. And I felt it. It was awesome.
I could not say enough good things about it. I'm sure it'll be brought up again. But for now, let's get on to hot take number 7, in which Rhaenyra's dragon rider search goes up in flames until it doesn't. I have a question. When I was watching this, I was like, even people who haven't read the books had to have called that Sir Darklyn wouldn't succeed, right? Like Dean totally did.
I knew he wasn't going to do it. It was too convenient. He was too willing to do it. Someone told me like, hey, Manny, we have this panther, right? They give me some big panther and they say, well, we pulled this panther out of the mountains of Cuba. And since you're Cuban, we just wanted to see if maybe you can ride it and it'll listen to you. I'd be like, hells no. Are you kidding me? Fuck that shit. You're going to have to handcuff my ass and throw me on there. There's no way. However, it was Rhaenyra who asked. And quite frankly, Rhaenyra can probably ask me to do something that I'm completely not comfortable with. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm totally willing. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. No problem. I'm going to do it because it's you.
This is somebody who he has sworn to serve Rhaenyra. He has been a very loyal member of her Kingsguard. He is part of a noble family. His grandmother, I think is what she said, was Targaryen. Yeah. And she says, like, we think this might work. And she does say, like, I'm requesting this, not ordering it. There was probably some eagerness on his part just because, wow, it would be amazing to be the first person who doesn't have the Targaryen or Velaryon name in Westerosi history to be a dragon rider. But also, like, I want to do everything I can to help my queen win this war. I'm sure there was some, like, self-importance about it, but I think there was also a lot of just, I live to serve about it. And, you know, for a moment there was a second where I was like, oh my God, are they going to change this? Because like they had Sea Smoke kind of bow to him a little bit. And then it was like, well, wait, Sea Smoke's like, never mind. I don't know how I feel about that, but it was whatever.
I knew that guy was getting turned into some baby back ribs. I knew it. When that dragon went down and like kind of like, oh yeah, here, you can ride it. I was like, dude, that dragon is trying to lure you there because he wants to eat you or set you on fire. So,
I mean, I didn't feel like it was that. He considered it for a second and then he was like, Sir Darklyn got too close. And the dragon's like, never mind.
Back, yeah, you know what? Forget it. I changed my mind.
Cats.
Fire.
It's a cat swatting a cup.
Yeah, exactly. You know, or like when the cat seems nice and he's like getting close to it and it's just like bap, like it just like hits you. Like,
The cat rolls on its back and is like, scratch my belly. And then you scratch its belly and it kills your hand.
Trap, you know? Yeah, I totally saw that one coming. I was like, there ain't no way. There ain't no way we just built up to this. There's no way they read like 2 pages out of a book and they're like, hey, dude, we found one. Let's get him on there. I'm like, nah, dude. This season is all about the barbecue. So we all know what's happening next.
However, later, Sea Smoke, who has been a lonely boy. He's missing his having like a bond. I love that when Rhaenyra's like, we feel like Sea Smoke is missing his bond. And I was like, oh, that's so cute. Sea Smoke literally chases down Adam of Hall. Me watching the scene with Sea Smoke chasing, quote unquote, Adam of Hall. I'm like, aw. Because I know what's going to happen, right? I know that Adam of Hall is Sea Smoke's writer. So I'm like, aw, is Sea Smoke playing? And then I'm like, yes, yes, yes! He's totally playing! And then I'm like, why cut the scene there? I want to see sea smoke nuzzling Adam, damn it. And this is one of my biggest qualms with this episode is, for real though, why try to make that a cliffhanger, especially with Rhaenyra going off on Syrax to see what's up at the very end? The preview for next week shows Adam is standing in front of sea smoke and it shows her asking, like, you know, what's the deal, man? And I'm obviously that's a huge paraphrase, but I think they should have ended this episode with her finding him and asking that and just left whatever his answer was for next week. Because I also, like, in watching the after the episodes stuff, they were like, we're leaving the viewer like wondering what's gonna happen next week, and it's like, are we wondering what side Adam is gonna be on? Yes. Mm-hmm. But are we wondering whether Adam is fucking riding this dragon, feeding him little treats out of his hand, like petting him and hugging him and being his new BFF? No, I'm not wondering any of that, and I want to fucking see it now. None of that is in question after the play chase scene. And Dean was like, so what's up with that? Does he like just like the smell of this guy or something? Like, it's pheromones? And I was like, let's be real. Adam doesn't not look like Laenor in terms of just, obviously they are not the same person, but he looks more like Laenor than his brother Alan does. But also they are both Corlys's sons as well. So yes, it's a Targaryen blood thing, but also I think particularly with what they're trying to show in the show is that it's a little bit of like a, because who knows how good Dragonslayer is, honestly. I don't know, but I think some of it is like, yeah, he looks a little bit more like Laenor than his brother does. Also, he is Laenor's half brother. The after the show thing bothered me because they're like, who knows? And even Dean was like, we fucking know.
So it's funny because where that's relatable for me is that my brother, he had two cats, right? And one of them had passed away and one of them stayed at my mom's because he moved to New York and he couldn't have him. So anytime that I went there, I had only met the cat a few times, like when we were youngest, and the cat always stayed in the garage, didn't want to mess with anyone. But every time I showed up, it came to me every single time because I feel that it thought it was my brother, or at least can see a similarity there. Since me and my brother look, we look a lot alike. So when I would walk in or I'd start talking or something like that, then the cat would come out and start meow, you know, and like wanting to be next to me and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, that's what happened in my brain anyway.
I loved it.
It was great.
I guess my question is, did you understand what was happening as somebody who hasn't read the books from the beginning of that scene when Sea Smoke is like flying like toward him, over him, quote unquote,
I had no idea. I thought the dragon was just pissed and it was just like, we're just going to eat somebody, so I'm going to play with my food before I eat him. Thought it was like just up to some nefarious stuff. But no, it was just being a little kitty.
Meow, meow. I think it's time for our favorites roundup. I'm going to start this by saying they finally added more stuff to the opening.
Yeah, I know. That was good.
To be honest, I couldn't. Obviously, I watched it twice, the intro, and I paused it a couple times. I definitely saw Sir Eric and Sir Arik, and it looked like a scene from the Red and the Gold Dragon dance. There was at least one other thing that I couldn't quite get a handle on, but I was like, why wait this many episodes? Like, that's a little, like, I don't know. Why do it after the first episode and then do it for the fucking rat catchers and then wait, have two episodes with nothing and then do it? But whatever. I'm still super happy that they finally did it. I also want to talk about my love of Rhaenyra's Babby's Briar Horse. Dragon collection. Briar Dragon collection. Question, is there a Dragon Girl version of Horse Girl? Do non-Targs, high or low-born, collect dragon toys? Inquiring minds need to know.
I would like to think so. They don't have My Little Ponies. They have My Little Dragons, you know? And they're like combing the hair, you know? And it's like, yep.
Also, I'm not going to say too much about this for possible spoilery reasons, but there's a dragon in the Vale, y'all. A dragon that's stealing sheep. And Rhaena seems very interested in it. Nice. There is a dragon that steals sheep around Dragonstone in the book, but there is not a dragon that steals sheep in the Vale while Rhaena is there in the book. That's all I'm going to say. My final favorite thing. Mobile igloos back, y'all. We just joked about it last week.
I know.
I thought we would never see that shit. That's stupid. I know, dude. Shit again.
I was like, God, guys, man, come on, dude. Who designed this thing?
It was like they brought Viserys back, so they're like, oh, gotta give a mobile igloo.
Gotta bring it. Exactly. Let's bring it all back now. Yeah, you know, they
I
did.
Mean, it was- was full on mobile igloo. Okay. Like we got the inside, the outside, like twice.
Yeah.
Oh man.
If you want to build that thing, this is the best episode for you to use as reference because there was a lot of shots, up close shots of the mobile igloo, man.
I want someone to 3D print me a mobile igloo.
Fuck that shit. We just fucking build that shit and we can ride that shit into the Dragon Con parade, you know? Like,
oh, could you imagine? But then you wouldn't be able to see anything.
No, you wouldn't be able to see anything, but
fill it with sheep.
Yeah, fill it with sheep, exactly.
Okay. What are your favorites?
The scenes with Allison Damon, it was great. I'm glad that she's a real person and not just some ghost. But it's just nice to have someone who's really like kind of mentally putting Damon to the task here because Damon is just used to just being fucking Damon. Anytime you see Damon around like other women, he always comes off as very like, oh, well, see, I'm the big man and you're just a little woman. And I feel like with this girl, she definitely kind of puts him in his place a bit just in the way that they interact with each other. I like that shit. Of course, Rhaenyra and Missaria love story. Absolutely hands down my favorite. It's one of the best things I've seen on the show. And for my last one, food for the pores, man. Here it comes, dude. It's another train or boat, or maybe there's trains on that boat, right? And they're filled with food, man.
Boats full of trains.
Boats full of trains. And on those trains full there's of
boats.
Exactly. And on those trains, there's just fruit cargo and vegetables and everything, dude. Yes. The propaganda train, it just struck back.
Literally Team Black propaganda because they had Rhaenyra's flags on all of those boats full of food. And it's like, oh, yeah, we'll ignore the fact that their blockade is the reason you guys don't have food. But
oh, yeah, it doesn't matter at that point. No, man, Team Black's like, look, guys, do you guys like food? Do you like boats? Do you like propaganda? Here it is, guys. Get ready, because this ship is coming into shore, baby, right now. Here it is.
Oh, my God.
Here's your food. Yeah, dude, I was all on board for it. I was like, yes, finally. Yes, I'm getting on. I was there waiting at the boat station all day, waiting to get on. And here it is, finally. Yes.
And also, I cannot express enough love for Rhaenyra and Missaria and how it seems to be an actual consensual, caring / possibly loving relationship and not like the dirty shit that Fire and Blood. And when I say it that way, I'm not shitting on the writing. The whole point of Fire and Blood is that it's written by like a maester or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he has like input from some septons and he also like feeds off of drama from that fool mushroom. And I'm not shitting on the writing of the book. I'm just saying like, it's very rare that I dislike a decision that they make in the mm-hmm. show. Like I honestly off the top of my head can't even recall one that was like really bad where mm-hmm. I thought, oh well, they chose this theory from the books and I hate it. I know a lot of people did not like the blood and cheese outcome, but I'm kind of neither here nor there on that because I don't want to see babies killed. And like, listen, I'm not Patrick.
No, exactly. We're not Patrick. Man. No one wants to see babies get killed except Patrick.
I don't think even Patrick actually wants to see babies get killed. Just to be very clear.
Yeah, just to be clear, he doesn't really want to do that. It's just funny. So
it's just funny to make fun of him when he's not here.
Exactly. He can't defend himself.
I know he listens to our episodes. So Patrick, when you listen to this, we are poking at you out of love. Last thoughts. We rated very few things again.
Again,
I don't know if I set up a 10 out of fucking 10 no, not even 10, 20 out of 10 Targ eyebrows for everything Rhaenyra and Missaria in this episode. Like I loved when they were talking in code in front of Jace and Jace was like, mm-hmm. What the fuck, mom? What the fuck?
No, any that had to do with that was, it was great. I had a difficult time getting through this podcast today because all I kept thinking about was that fucking scene with them, how fucking loving it was and how nervous it makes me even just thinking about it. Like I'm a little 16-year-old. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's my crush.
It's giving you like those butterflies that you haven't had in a million years.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
I will also give the mobile igloo sighting 10 out of 10 Targ eyebrows.
Anytime it makes an appearance. And especially this one. Dude, we should give it an 11 out of 10 because of the detail. We got a closer look at it. You know? More detail.
It also had to like rumble away real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I'll take a point away from it and I'll just give it a 10 because it didn't make a funny noise as it was getting away. You know, I was expecting like a ticka-ticka-ticka-ting, you know, like some kind of like cartoon noise as it was getting away, you know, and it didn't do that.
But it did save, it did save poor Helena and bring her back to her bugs.
It really did. That poor girl, man. She's seen some things.
Allison needs to stop making her leave the fucking Red Keep.
I know, dude. This is
every time Allison is like, Helena, we should do the thing, something bad happens to poor Helena. Just leave her in her room with her crickets.
Yeah, exactly. Next time Allison comes up here and says to do something, just say no. Just say you can't, because something bad's going to happen.
All right. As we close out the episode, we just want to give a shout out to our Heroes Tier patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. And thank you to our listeners for joining us for Hot D Takes. Manny and I will, of course, be back next week to cover Season 2, Episode 7, the penultimate episode. Very excited. For the most current news and updates about this series, make sure to follow at A Geek Saga on Facebook, Instagram, and or Threads, TikTok, Twitter. But also, please consider backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Geek Saga podcast. If you like what you heard, please check out other Geek Saga entertainment endeavors, including the Sagas and Sass webcast and podcast, and Ice and Fire Con.